have to understand what is going on, not only in this country, but in the world, especially in Africa, because we are an African people, nothing else. We have always been an African people. We have always maintained our own value system, and I will prove that to you. As much as he has tried, our people have resisted for 413 years in this wilderness, and they resisted for this generation to carry out what must be done. We cannot fail our ancestors. Cannot fail our ancestors. Everywhere you can point to, take the English language. There are cats who come here from Italy, from Germany, from Poland, from France. In two generations, they speak English perfectly. We have never spoken English correctly. Never have we spoken English correctly. Never, never, never. Now then, some people may not understand Brother Rapp when he talked about whom we ally with. He said we have to ally with Mexican Americans, Puerto Ricans, and the dispossessed people of the earth. He did not mention poor whites. We must understand that. I will not deny that poor whites in this country are oppressed. But there are two types of oppression. One is exploitation, the other is colonization. And we have to understand the difference between both of them. Exploitation is when you exploit somebody of your own race. Colonization is when you exploit somebody of a different race. We are colonized, they are exploited. They are exploited. Now let us explain how the process of exploitation and colonization works.
Listening to Trigger Radio with Chris and Rec. Catch that. Peace.
Catch it. Peace, peace. This is Nitty Scott MC representing the Boombox family, and you are rocking with Chris and Rec of Trigger Radio. Let's get it.
Yeah, yeah. Peace, love, and justice. Chill with Town Bless Radio, Trigger Radio. The movement is one movement.
Yo, what's good? Live from the BX. This is Intikana representing for the Boogie Down and showing love to Chris and Rec. Trigger Radio, if you don't know, get in tune. What?
Trigger Radio.
One of the most important people at Temple University, one of the most important people in the history of the American University, a man who, along with his colleagues some 25 years ago, started what has to be called an intellectual and academic revolution. 25 years ago, and in case you don't know what happened then, the first PhD in African American studies was instituted here at Temple University. The first department in the world to give a PhD. And let me just, I'm introducing my friend Dr. Malefe Asante, right. But it takes, wait, hold on, I have to say a little bit more. He says I don't need to do any more than this, but I think I do. You know, to give a PhD is to give a terminal degree, a final degree, the highest degree that a university can bestow upon a person. Their PhDs in history, their PhDs in sociology, psychology. Let me speak, brother. Yeah, okay.
Oh, you got your...
The final degree, the highest degree that a university can give. Now, you should know that for a long time, universities didn't even want to teach courses in Black history. You came to Temple back in my day. You said, well, I'd like to take a course in Black history. They said, well, take a course in American history, and we'll have 2 days on Black history. That's all y'all deserve. But this gentleman, this scholar, this activist, this intellectual, along with a group of committed colleagues, said that that's not enough. So first, they petitioned for a master's degree, and they got that. And they said, since we have a master's degree, why not a PhD? And so 25 years ago, a PhD was established here at Temple. And I like to say this, that you all are part of this history. That you all, because of this gentleman, are standing in a historic space. And we have to defend that historic space. We have to defend it and move it forward. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you a friend of mine. I'm not finished yet, Malefe. A good man, a great scholar. He's published or edited something like 69 books, 400 articles in academic journals. He speaks all over the world, meets with African presidents, meets with scholars in China, South Africa, and all around the United States. And probably is one of the most revered and respected intellectual academic activists in America today. Without further ado, Dr. Malefe Asante.
Thank you. Hotep. I want to, first of all, thank the students and the community for having this incredible rally. It's about time. Let me just say that Professor Monteiro has given you some introduction, and I just want to thank him. And I want to thank the students who have put this together, the community who have put this together. The community has already been talking to the administrators. Let me also say that to those of you who are here to hear what we have to say, and those of you who are here to protect us, the police, and the undercover officers, we really happy. we know that the history of America is a history of COINTELPRO. That's something you can look up. So one of the things that we want to do today is to just tell you some history about this university. I want to give you some facts And I want to explain to you what happened and what has happened. 40 years ago, when I was a student, we basically shut down education in America the way it was to create Black Studies. Because when we came to these campuses, we came to these universities, they did not have any information or knowledge that was being presented adequately about African people. So we closed down many universities. That's why students are responsible for the creation of African American studies. It wasn't created by the faculty. No faculty members got together and said, you know what? We need to have African American studies at our university. They were not thinking like that. But yet the students, with their spirit, said, wait a minute, something is missing here. I'm in university and I recognize that something is missing. It was an era something like this era. An era of racism and an era of complacency. An era when it was possible for a lot of people who didn't understand what was going on to be confused about the nature of the society in which we live. There has never been, and I've said this before, it's been quoted, there has never been an educational institution in America that truly wanted to educate Black people properly. And there's never been one. There's no school, no university where people are willing to give African American people the right to do the things that we know ought to be done. And so at Temple University, nearly 40 years ago, they created here first the Afro-Asian Institute. And then after the Afro-Asian Institute, the Black students created the Pan-African Studies Department. And after the Pan-African Studies Department, with the community, this was the community's help, and always the community was important, because without the community, nothing was possible. Here in North Philadelphia, the community and the students worked together and created Pan-African Studies on Temple's campus. This is right in the heart of Philadelphia, heart of North Philadelphia. And once they created it, and let me just tell you, there was always resistance. There was never a time when there was no resistance. People resisted. They resisted the creation of the Afro-Asian Institute. They resisted the creation of the Pan-African Studies Department. And they eventually, as I will explain to you, they also resisted the creation of the PhD program at Temple University. That wasn't easy either, but we'll talk about that. So what, this is the situation. When we understand that after 40 years, we now have a Department of African American Studies, we have to then understand what happened. We created in 1987 and 88, we created the first PhD program. We had at that time at Temple University an enlightened administration under Peter Lear Corus, under Pat Swigert, under Barbara Brownstein, and under Lois Kronholm. We had an enlightened administration, and that enlightened administration said, you cannot have a major university in a major American city and not have an African American Studies department. And in fact, not only did they say that, Peter Lear Corus said, at Temple University, in the heart of North Philadelphia, we should have the number one department of African American Studies in the country. And he said it at a time, look at this, he said it at a time when they didn't have a department at the University of Penn. They didn't have a department anywhere else. They had one at Temple. And Temple, he said, not only should they have a department, but Temple should also have a PhD program. As Peter Lear Corus did. And let me tell you what. Every successive administration after that has tried to destroy the program. In every way they could. They're more clever. They're more subtle. They have done everything to undermine what was created here. And let me tell you what, that program, when it was started 25 years ago, was not only the number one program in the nation, it was the only PhD program in the nation. Now there are 13 PhD programs. University of Penn not only has a strong department, they also have a PhD program. Temple is not the only game in town. Temple could have been the most dominant game in town. But through the machinations that have gone on here to this very point, where the department went from 13 faculty members down to less than 10. Actually, around 7 if you talk about the people who are considered presidential lines. That's what has happened. Almost half of the people gone. And so when we look at what is happening in this, and this is a beautiful teacher, I hope we continue to have them. I remember them. At UCLA, when I was a student, we had these kinds of teachers because they are necessary. You can't get everything in the in the classroom. You have to sometimes come and hear people, like the people in the community, come here and give you the facts about what's going on in North Philadelphia. So we stand here in solidarity. I stand here in solidarity with the students, in solidarity with their demands. The African American Studies department at Temple be given its free reign to be the kind of department that it can be. I stand in solidarity, and I always say, down with racism, down with control, up with democracy, and up with freedom, and solidarity always with truth. I'm really happy.
Coming to you live from the 305. Ya tú sabes lo que hay, papi. Oye, mira, estás escuchando Trigger Radio. Pa' que lo sepa, aquí en Amherst, Massachusetts. What's up?
Yo, 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 you listen to Trigger Radio only on WMUA 91.1 FM, streaming live at www.wmua.org, where you get knowledge, culture, hip-hop, and all that good stuff.
I thank you for listening to Trigger Radio at TRGG Radio. Yo, Dr. WordPress.
KRS-One chilling, Trigger Radio all day. Stop the violence. You know what it is. Listen. Peace, love, unity, and having fun. That's the style of KRS-One. Stay tuned.
And you know where I'm from, New York City, Ghettonomics, baby. This wrong for the Cold Crush Brothers, man. You're chilling with Rack and Chris on Trigger Radio, okay? Tune in so y'all can get some knowledge, some wisdom, and understanding, all right? The others ain't real.
No me va a sacar mi campo.
Love and justice. You're dealing with Town Blessed right here on Trigger Radio. The movement is one movement. The movement is now. The movement is you. One.
Ven acá, ven acá, párense ahí ustedes dos. ¿A dónde le van?
¿Qué
sucede? ¿Qué sucede? Revísalo, revísalo una vez, revísalo una vez.
Papá,
no te me alteres, cógelo suave, espérate, cógelo suave. Revísalo, revísalo. Venga, te voy a poner con la autoridad también. Súbelo, súbelo, jipeta, súbelo, jipeta. Cógelo suave, cógelo suave. Ustedes lo van a depurar y lo sueltan mañana a las 10, así que estén tranquilos, oyero.
Diablo, check, this is KET, Cat One, from New York City, hanging out with my man Rec.
And when I'm not facing bullshit charges or having the police take out my house, I'm checking out Trigger. Peace.
Ve, monstruo, te desmonté que esa vaina era difícil, te lo voy a pagar.
Papá, ¿qué programa es ese? Aquí no hay disparate en este país, todos los programas son malos. Cambia eso, a ver si encontramos otra vaina. Por eso que yo me liquido con el cable. Es que no hay nada en la televisión aquí local, en verdad.
Todo copiado, la misma vaina siempre, loco.
Same from Brooklyn, New York, representing New York City, Cape Town, South Africa, Pangea. And when I'm in the area, I listen to Chris and Rec on Trigger Radio.
Here we go, one, two. Hey yo, everything is real, now there's nothing here to lie about. Cop and go to Jake's around, fix it up, hide out.
Live and direct, popping on the scene, ref star. We are Circa 95, repping Uptown, Washington Heights, and the PX, all in effect. And we out here with Trigger Radio, getting it in. Rack and Chris, what up? You know what it is, holla back. Let's go.
Revolution televised and going viral. Music is my 9 to 5, make it for survival. Every day a test. Lay my head to bed, but never get no rest. Yeah, you dealing with the best, then we only getting better. Cosi na no mi sancocho. Mix it all together, put it in the pan. Visions of the future, man, it's more than just a plan. More than just a plan.
Buena noche, a mí me gusta el ritmo que sale de mi coche. English, Spanish, a mí nadie me toque. Dando duro siempre para mi bloque. Uptown, Washington, you know you gon' love it. Y me falta una cuanta cosa para yo cumplir. ¿Quién te dijo, compadre, que esto es fácil? Quiero cura, debo tener la basura. El alma me fractura, ni el médico chino puede buscarme una cura. Amo pa' Bonao, pa' bañarme en Río Fula. De la opresión que vivo, diamante yo escribo. En la calle de Nueva York, yo puedo ser profesor. A veces no se ven quién son tus enemigos. Contigo, conmigo, el futuro en mi mano no está perdido.
I'm not doing this shit right now. What the
fuck? I'm not doing this shit on Trigger Radio.
Yo, what up? This is your Siri X. Coming to you live and direct from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, representing every 6 to 8 on Friday on Trigger Radio. You know what I mean?
One. The main principal political voice coming from the right now is the Tea Party.
This is Michelle Bricks, and you're listening to Trigger Radio.
Trigger Radio.
One, two, one, two. Check it out. It's Trigger Radio, y'all. Every Friday, 6 to 8. 413-545-3691 is a phone number to hit us up. WMUA.org to listen online. Big shout going out to all the online listeners, supporters, and the folks checking in.
Yes, yes. And we're still digesting, dealing with the Rick Ross issue. Slyly. Awkwardly, openly promoting, taking advantage of women in his lyric. And it's been blowing up all over social media, so I'm sure you're up on it. Again, you know, we'd like to hear from you if you have anything to comment on. But, you know, we also want to give the sister who's rolling with us, you know, Abby, a chance to respond to, you know, what we've been talking about, as well as how she interprets the Rick Ross issues as they are unfolding.
Yeah.
How you feeling about all this?
It's hard to hear because this is, you know, hip hop. You know, this is what I'm about. This is what I live. So for somebody, and I wouldn't necessarily call, you know, Rick Ross and some of these other cats, you know, hip, like embody what hip hop is, but as a woman, just hearing that, like, you're basically laying out some sort of blueprint for, you know, the young men who are listening, you know, for just men in general who are listening. Like, it's almost something cute to do. It's almost something that is, all right, I'm cool because I'm doing this. And I've known too many women, you know, in my own life who have gone through that experience, sexual assault, rape, you know, date, drug, you know, all of that. So for me to hear that and for it to kind of be okay to be something that, you know, like we said, he's making money off of it is just ridiculous. And there are so many women, you know, like this cat is being played on the radio, like everyone's listening to, you know, what he's talking about. But, you know, no one's really taking the time to hear the victims and not even like allowing that or opening that opportunity, that space for women to speak to, you know, their suffering. And I don't think it's conductive to the healing process at all. And it's devastating because, you know, homeboy's rolling around, you know, getting money, getting paid, da, 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 and these women and women who have gone through this experience are still paying the price within their own lives. So it doesn't, I'm not down with it at all. And, you know, man, it just pisses me off, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of attention swarms yeah. around the issue. Mm-hmm. You know, this was like the same a few years back with mm-hmm. the Nelly tip drill
yeah.
issue. And, you know, people came out, protested, yeah. you know, hit him in the pocket in some places. Mm-hmm. You know, he couldn't actually go and perform in a couple places because people protested. And, you know, we sure, you know, Rick Ross, he's going to lose a little weight over this.
Well,
he's going to come back a little, you know,
but the accountability, a little thinner. You know?
Like, but the issue is, you know, we forget about these moments after we respond to them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how do you, because what I hear and what you're saying is we need something that's more broad-based, mm-hmm. more long-lasting, more consistent in terms of how we really respond to these issues and how we continue to teach around them, even when there is no crisis,
mm-hmm.
right? And one of the things that's intriguing about the lyric itself is, and the song itself, you know, you don't even know, mm-hmm. is the lyric that he says puts all the blame on the female.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know, mm-hmm. right? So it's her responsibility. So ultimately, mm-hmm. you're responsible for your own rape. And this is the excuse that folk often give is that, you know, you shouldn't be wearing that,
mm-hmm.
right? You shouldn't be walking after dark. You know, because our communities have been so broken down, they're no longer safe. So people just assume that if you are a so-called vulnerable person or vulnerable being, body, that anything can go down with you mm-hmm. and it's your fault.
I completely agree, you know. Like you said, the blame is always the woman. And even within, like, Latino culture, as a Latina, you know, that's how you know, society and how, you know, we interact with one another. We're always, especially, I feel like as a Latina, I always have to, you know, like, there's some sort of regulation on what I can and can't do compared to other women mm-hmm. who aren't of color. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to dress, speak, act a certain way, or I'm perceived in this way while, you know, like somebody who isn't of color can kind of be about and not have to think about how, what they say, wear, or do, how that. So it's all this, like, it's just layers upon layers, I think. And, you know, something that just pushes me kind of to the edge is just like, you can't step up and take responsibility for what you said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this like, oh, you know, like, I love women, you know, I respect women, mm-hmm. you know, but it's this constant, I don't know, this constant dialogue where, oh, females this, females that, la, la, la. Oh, but, you know, like, I love women, you know? So it's kind of like, don't come at me with that, you know, BS. It's, you know, be real, be upfront, you know, like, I feel like rap, hip hop is, it's an art form. It's a creative, like, process. It's deep. Like, think about what you're saying. Think about your lyrics. Like, what are you getting at? So, you know, that's my take on it.
Yeah, we're still digesting that. 413-545-3691. Also, during that long interlude, we heard a clip from a rally at Temple University. And that was Malefi Asante, who many may know as the chair of the longtime chair of Black Studies at Temple University, but also, you know, he's the one who coined the concept of Afrocentricity, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, late 70s and 80s. And that's pretty much, you know, his claim to fame. It really built, along with a lot of other folk, but really, you know, built a solid program over the past 25 years. And so now Temple University is in crisis. If you've been following Trigger, you know we covered last year the Cornell situation and the fact that Cornell University Africana Studies was taken over by the university and all their autonomy, departmental autonomy, was snatched. And so this is a trend that's happening not only in K through 12 in the case of ethnic studies in Tucson and elsewhere, but also increasingly at the university and college level, where areas of study that were born through struggle, that were achieved through struggle, that forced the university to include the perspectives of non-traditional, non-white students and their histories and experiences, and demanding, putting demands on the university to hire faculty from those backgrounds, is in jeopardy. And this is something that, as we celebrate, you know, like the 40 plus years of Black Studies institutionally, I mean, obviously we know Black Studies itself goes back into the turn of the 20th century at least. But if we just take the 40-year mark, how do we really assess how strong our programs are, considering many of our programs are not only being taken over by university officials who have no knowledge, expertise, or respect for what has been built, but also the fact that many of our pioneering scholars are passing away and retiring. So who's going to hold the weight after them? Mm-hmm. How the university is going to respond? And one of the things that I always like to point out is that for a long time, Black Studies felt safe precisely because this particular battle had been won in the streets. But absence of a social movement outside of the university and college, how can we say that we really have protected Black Studies, ethnic studies, et cetera? And so part of the reason, part of my theory for why these programs are in jeopardy, is precisely because we lack a social movement around these issues, coast to coast, city to city. And so this is part of the reason why we're in jeopardy. And those of us who are committed to this area of knowledge production have to take note and have to come up with some kind of blueprint and plan for the next 25 years. Mm. And this is something that's critical, because once, as we've seen in the case of removing Sean, you know, Sean Arcee was removed mm-hmm. from being the director of ethnic studies in mm-hmm. Tucson. And then, boom, the program goes right after that.
Right.
So when you remove these programs, people are watching. And, you know, deans and provosts at different colleges are watching what happens at these universities. And if they can pull it off at a place like Temple, who's to say they couldn't pull it off at a place like UMass, mm-hmm. even with our strong history and roots mm-hmm. in building alternative knowledge that becomes critical knowledge at the university level. 413-545-3691. That's where we at. Trigger Radio all day.
Trigger Radio all day.
So we got a full house, and we got some family members just dropped in on
indeed,
us.
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
So why don't
we'll
play?
Go to a musical break, and yeah. We'll be right back. 413-545-3691. Y'all, it's Trigger Radio.
We'll be right back.
Yes, 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 y'all. It's Trigger Radio every Friday, 6 to 8, 91.1 FM, WMUA. Streaming live, WMUA.org. Every Friday is how we're doing it. We got a full house, Brother Chris, Brother Breck.
Yes, yes.
Yes, and just join.
We had some fam drop in. Rosa no Clemente, doubt. Who you heard at the top of the hour, and really kicked off this whole Rick Ross critique that's going on, mm-hmm. and that has gone viral, and it's up to 10,000 views on YouTube. And the Black Youth Project, we told folks to go to blackyouthproject.com, sign the petition, file their own video protest to Rick Ross. Talk about, I mean, obviously you didn't need much inspiration, but, you know, where did it come from to just decide out of the blue, we got to challenge this right now, right here?
Well, I mean, first let me let you know this is your exclusive. Chris is always mad. He's like, why don't you talk to us? And I haven't done any interviews because, to be honest, I'm a doctoral student. I spent this whole week organizing, but I'm a scholar activist, so that's what we have to do first and foremost. But really, look, what happened, I was in my bedroom with my husband on Monday, and I was like, this is crazy. I've been fighting this for 15 years, and it's just getting worse and worse. And I make the distinction between hip-hop music and what I'm terming or coining, if nobody else has, the rap industrial complex at this time that is destroying this culture, you know. And there's always ways for me to get my message out, you know, but I had never in my life done a YouTube video. So we just threw up the iPhone. And at first, I did it and come out right. And then my husband was just like, just stand up like you're giving a speech at a rally and we'll stop it at 4 minutes. And that's what we did. And to be honest, I didn't expect, like, in less than 5 days, I don't know a lot about YouTube, but apparently almost 10,000 views is a lot, you know. And I think I touched a nerve. And I think the nerve I touched is not only are we sick and tired of hip-hop being represented like this, we're sick and tired of rape culture. We're sick and tired of women being violated. And you know, we've been fighting this fight. 18 months ago, a coalition of me and other sisters did We Are the 44% to talk about, to respond to Too Short. But one of the things in these responses is to me, it's about educating young people. So the next day, there were two high schools that contacted me and one brother from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and within a day, the young kids did their own YouTube. I got my nieces calling me, you know, cousins asking what to do. And for me, first and foremost, as someone from the Bronx, that's to me the how you organize. I don't want to have this in an academic environment where we try to analyze what's happening. First, we should already be clear on what has happened to hip-hop culture and who's been the most destructive. But now it's about holding men accountable. You know, so this idea that Rick Ross thinks he can say that and then in 3 days say, I really didn't mean that, you know, my queens. First of all, right there, you're putting women in a mm-hmm. position where we don't even exist as humans.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's been a couple petitions started. First, the Black Youth Project and Mark Anthony Neal, David Leonard, Brittany Cooper, where you can drop your 30-second piece of a scripted thing that everybody's saying. As well, Ultraviolet, this other petition got started. It's got 50,000 signatures to have Reebok, which is up here in Canton, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. pull their sponsorship from Rick Ross. And as well, Rap Rehab, which is Paul Porter, who founded Industry Ears with Lisa Fager, has launched kind of the executive thing. So I'm happy that there's all these prongs. Like, some people want the sponsorship. Some people want to hit at the executives. Some people want to be about how do we educate. And I think hip-hop, as always, is in the forefront of dealing with rape culture. All the women that have been talking about this in the last 2 years have been women of color. But lastly, what is disheartening is that artists who call themselves conscious have not stepped up the way I expected them to step up. And in these moments, you end up understanding what this system does. But really, what is the accountability of all these men who have made their careers about being revolutionary? and are principled human beings, and I know this. Mm-hmm. But why is it that when it comes to women, we can't have men stepping up in droves like sisters step up in droves when it's an issue that affects men in this culture? And I'm not going to name names. They should know who they are because they haven't taken 45 seconds to drop a response. But then there are artists like Brother Ali, Jasiri X, Chuck D, who have directly contacted me. What can I do? What do I need to do? And that's important. But I believe particularly the artists who are conscious, who are revolutionary, who give us that political food and energy we need, they have to step up, not only because some of them have daughters, because this is questioning right now the humanity of our people. So, you know, wow.
Yeah. Word up.
Sorry.
Rosa Clemente joining us. And also, I mean, we mentioned earlier the national climate in terms of the Steubenville case.
Yeah.
And also, but locally here, the colleges have been dealing with this issue around rape culture. Amherst College canceled a bunch of their classes on one day to really have a town hall. UMass did something similar.
And there were sisters up here at Amherst College that were told by the administration to keep, maybe this is not what happened. You know, and that's the problem. The thing is that Rick Ross dropped such an explicit lyric. Like, it's not that this hasn't been building. It's he was the tipping point. This has been building. But you're literally talking about drugging a woman and raping her. And no matter what you said, you're old enough. You're a CEO. You have people locked up in a prison.
Mm-hmm.
Locking them up over, well, you didn't lock them up, but you maintain them in the system, some of them for doing this stuff.
He held the keys.
He held the keys. So, you know, to me, you know, what I think these moments really are about is about how do we maintain the culture? Because the culture is not going to die.
Right.
Hip-hop is not going to die, so people can get over that right now. But how can we put a blow to the rap industry at this point? And if it's going to be the rap industry, let it be, let it go. And we need to understand what position people are playing in the culture. And if they're not playing the position of humanity, I'm not effing with them anymore. That's how I feel.
How you feel this should pick up from here? I mean, once more people start to make their voices heard around it, where's the larger movement in terms of education and outreach? I mean,
to me, it's all about education and outreach with young people. I think this, his lyric, along with my YouTube, along with the other campaigns, is the perfect opportunity for someone to insert that in a curriculum and teach to young people, right? Especially young boys. And people don't, I have an 8-year-old daughter, right? People don't want to understand. We cannot wait till our daughters are 16. We can't wait till they're 14. Unfortunately, we can't even wait till they're 12 anymore. Because, again, by 18, almost half of African-American Latino women in this country will be sexually assaulted and violated, right? So it's not only about how we teach our young girls to be protected, because in any situation, you're subject to violence in any situation, right? It's about how we teach young boys that this is not acceptable anymore. And that's how we hit it. We hold cats accountable, but we teach young people. Because I don't feel like having a conversation with Rick Ross, trying to convince him about what he did was wrong. He clearly knows what he did is wrong. He clearly is not worried about either his money or, look, the latest report I got out of Billboard magazine that's carrying this story the last 2 days, is that apparently Kanye West and Kendrick Lamar are about to get on the song. And we need to think about
it. About to get on Rocko's song.
About to get on Rocko's song. And people are saying, is they going to take the Rick Ross lyric out? And I said, I don't care if they took the Rick Ross lyric. This thing is all tainted.
Yeah, they can't do it.
Especially if they even go there, we have to step it up at the level that these entertainers are no longer going to be allowed to get away. You have your money, whatever, but you're not going to be allowed to be walking around like everything is all right. And we have to stop this destructive kind of atmosphere coming at our children. We got to be like the Jedi Masters right now. We got to protect our babies from this. And if we can't even do this, which is mostly through social media, like, I'm not in front of a Def Jam or whatever, and I literally probably don't personally have the time. But we have social media, and I understand at this moment the power that, like, I never understood it before. And to me, it's not what I did. It's that I'm speaking for a lot of sisters that still feel like they can't speak out. And that's if that's the only thing that we do as women who are this kind of pioneer generation, we got a whole generation of young sisters, 20 and 30, coming up that are already feeling like they're under attack. And we can't allow that to happen anymore.
That's the voice of Rosa Clemente, hip-hop activist, human rights activist, and talking about this issue around rape culture. For folks who don't know what that term means, you know, how would you define rape culture as being diffused throughout American society? I mean, talk about, you know, what you mean with when the term rape culture.
I mean, I think we increasingly, very quickly become a society that is not valuing female lives, you know. And in valuing, I mean through imagery, through, you know, what we decide is important, what we teach our young girls, you know. So, I mean, look, I could go down the line of cases mm-hmm. in my life, you know. I think part of rape culture is not the physical act itself. It's everything that comes that makes that physical act seem to be okay, and also that physical act of damage, females really never get justice. I don't mean just through the courts. You hardly ever get a rape conviction, but I mean throughout their whole lives. And, you know, so it's increasingly becoming rape culture in this sense that it seems that by a time a girl in this country is at that prepubescent age, that they're ripe for attack physically. And mentally. So it's pervasive in so many ways now. And again, it's not just the physical aspect that builds to that. It's just the constant subjugation of women and the media imagery of them and the constant need for girls my daughter's age already to, like, they already inundated with these messages where you as a mother have to be explaining what sexy is and that that's not what we achieve, no matter how political you are, because they're inundated wherever they go with this. And I think that's the buildup to rape culture. Now, the sister who's really been, I think, putting that stuff out, work out, there's that sister, Zarina Maxwell, who went on Fox News and then they attacked her and they said vile things about her when she said it's not about showing women how not to get raped, it's about teaching boys how not to rape. You know, and that's the other thing that happens when you speak out, that a lot of women get marginalized, because when they do speak out, I don't really read people's comments, but there were a couple, I mean, I did read them, and a couple comments were literally like, well, who would want to rape you? And it's like, I know you're behind a computer, but you still put that out there. Right. And I think if younger sisters see that, they're like, I ain't trying to get involved in this. Like, not only am I speaking up against, pushing against the system, but I'm pushing against some men in my own culture. Then when I put my opinion out there, I'm subject to violence through the internet, because that stuff can be devastating to a young sister who's trying to come up and be an activist and stuff like that. So, you know, to me, that's all part of that rape culture, all right. of it.
It's Trigger Radio every Friday, and a lot to digest, you know, a lot to digest with that. And this is something that we definitely need to, you know, not make a one-time issue. And I mentioned earlier how we gather when there's moments of crisis and then it kind of fades out. And we do that with everything. But with this one, we really got to take advantage of the opportunity and sustain this argument.
And that's what it is. It's an opportunity. And folks can hit me, us up on Facebook. Well, you know, like I said, there's other people responding and other collectives. So what I kind of did today with this brother out in Seattle, David Leonard, is we started It's Bigger Than Rick Ross Facebook page, right. where people can post their campaign or their response. But what we really want is for young people, like if you have a young person in your life, they already probably heard it. you got to gauge what age is appropriate, but have them listen to it. Go to the YouTube. It's Rosa Clemente and Rick Ross. View that and then link right to Facebook, right? And let's make sure that when we do have this this talk, that there's already kind of a race element taking mm-hmm, hold mm-hmm. where some white women are then beginning to talk about black men that's in right. a way that is not appreciated, you know.
Because this is part of the historic legacy.
We have to balance that out as folks of color. Like, you're not going to be talking about every black man, because that's not, or every Latino man. That's not what we're, that's not the issue,
right.
you know, because there's a lot of brothers that are stepping up. I'm going to say that. So if you go to It's Bigger Than Rick Ross, tomorrow it'll be live, and just go there to see whatever level you want to get involved. But for most of all, it's not something you can avoid. If you love hip hop, you got to do something about this. That's that.
Period.
No doubt. Yeah. And we're definitely calling on the listeners and the folks that have been rolling with us in reference to, you know, the movements that we've been trying to make to step up to the bat, especially, you know, the fellas out there and take heed to what is being discussed. Get involved, not just by, you know, clicking a like button, but, you know, let's consider how we can start organizing to do these. You know, we're in positions of the possibility of being in the classroom and such, and especially for me, you know, I work with young men, and you know, this is something I'm taking very serious. So, you know, we're calling you all out. You know what I mean? Like, you know, step up let's show and prove and lead by example.
And I know you got to close out, but because we're on a college, you know, it's important to understand that you have to protect your people. And there has to come a time where young college people begin to intervene in behavior that's unacceptable. It's the weekend. People are going to be drinking. People are going to be drugging. People are just going to not be in their right mind for various reasons. And as a crew of female, male, 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 female, female, you have to intervene the minute you see something. If not, you're complicit. Like I say, silence is consent, but not intervening is now complicity as well.
Word up. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there, but definitely this won't be the last time we talk about it, and that we'll keep folks up to date on that and post it our spaces as well. So, Rosa, thanks for dropping mm-hmm. in.
Thank you for having me.
And that's Trigger Radio, y'all. And we'll be back next week. Till next time, peace.
Peace.